A t-shirt and jeans, mac and cheese, oceans and sunsets. Some things in life are an obvious match, like RIAs and Schwab Advisor Services, the number one choice for independent advisors looking for a custodian who can help them go further. With all the wealth services, technology, and support an RIA firm needs, the difference is so obvious, it's Schwabious. Find your match and learn why custody is just the beginning at schwabious.com.
Hannah Murray on TRE in the afternoon.
Good afternoon. Joining us on the line now is Nicole Howell. She's a book editor, brand content consultant, company director, and mum of two. Her book, Not a Survival Guide, is your straight-talking parenting companion for navigating the shift from childhood to teen. It blends personal reflection with practical advice in a way that feels both accessible and supportive. Welcome to the show, Nicole.
Thanks so much. Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Great to have you on the show. So, I mean, we hear about the teenage years as being a particularly difficult time for both the teenagers themselves and certainly for the parents. But I suppose the more armed with information you are, it doesn't have to be as bad as you might think it might be.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's actually how the book came to fruition in the first place, to be honest, because I kind of felt really quite supported through the various stages of having my children. So baby toddler groups and even like the dreaded WhatsApp groups, I guess, were some form of support. But when it got to teenage years, I just felt I didn't really have the support network that I needed, and I didn't really have the information that I felt like I desperately needed at the teenage stage, because they change so quickly, like children do at every phase. But I just felt completely underprepared, in truth.
Yeah. And it can really, really help, can't it, chatting to other mums and parents about their experiences, whether you're chatting with them in person or online or just reading other people's experiences in a book, and realising that what you're going through is perfectly normal and you're not alone.
Yeah, completely. We're all in it together. And actually, as I was creating the book, I ended up speaking to lots of lovely parents who were either in the throes of bringing up teenagers or had already been through it. And actually, we all found it really cathartic. It was really nice just to have kind of like a little club of imperfect parents that were trying to do our best by our teenagers and by ourselves as well.
Yeah. And what were some of the recurring themes that would come up, some of the main issues that parents were having with their teenagers?
I don't think it was so much the issues, but I think a lot of the time it was kind of the expectation of what this was going to be like. I think there is such a narrative around teenagers and how horrible they are, and particularly on social media. At the moment, there's a lot of talk of teenage boys. So I think particularly as mums, we feel like there's a lot of pressure to keep our teenage boys as such in check and make sure that we're doing the right thing. It feels like a big responsibility because they're obviously pulling away from you, but they need you more than ever. So it's a real contradiction as you move through these years. But I think when we were talking, as long as you have their back and you are constantly there for them and you just keep turning up, that was the reoccurring thing that people who have already experienced it were kind of on board with.
Yeah. Yeah. And I suppose it's easy to say, you know, it's very important for you to have a good relationship with your kids and to be able to talk to them about anything and for them to be able to talk to you about anything. And that's like the perfect world. That's what you would want as a parent. But it doesn't always happen like that. It doesn't always flow as easy as you might want it to.
No, completely not. I think often you can keep trying and actually they're not very receptive to your communication, however perfect you want to be. And I think if you take that pressure away and you just adapt the world that you're living in together so that you can kind of reach them when possible and kind of adapt your expectations. So things like if you're having a conversation and you want to talk about something that's maybe a bit tricky or could be a bit embarrassing, maybe for you or for them or whatever, doing doing things like doing it side by side, so in the car or on the sofa, or using TV as a tool or something on the radio, that can be a really helpful way of kind of connecting with them. But I think if you keep your expectations that you're going to live in this perfect bubble of you're going to talk to them about everything and everything's going to go well, then you're going to be let down at some point because it's just not how it works.
Yeah. And it can be difficult to have those tricky conversations about sex, maybe, or for mums to speak to their sons about ways to treat girls and not treat girls, and talking about all the pornography and things like that maybe should come up, and certainly all the sexting and stuff that goes on, and taking a picture of yourself naked and sending it to someone else, all these things that parents are really worried about. Are kind of subjects that should be brought up in some way, I suppose.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we're navigating a very different, very shifting world to the one that we grew up in. There are some similarities, of course, but I think technology has really changed the game. And I think that by putting your head in the sand about it, which is what some people opt to do, and just like hope that it kind of goes away, that's never going to help. But the one reoccurring thing that I hear a lot, the opposition to what I'm saying, which is we should be talking as much as possible, be honest as early as possible, normalize these conversations in our homes. The main opposition that I tend to get is, well, if I talk to them, then they'll know about it and they're more likely to do it. But the fact is, there's lots of data to support that talking to your children about sex, for example, is not going to make them want to go out and immediately have sex. No. We have to educate our children. There's lots of research that they have in Holland, where they are very open from a very, very early age. They actually have pregnant women come into the schools to talk to them about sex education very early on. And actually their teen pregnancy rate is a lot lower than a lot of other areas in Europe. So it's kind of talking about those things that's super important, even when it makes you cringe or you're a bit embarrassed by it.
Yeah. God, it's interesting you brought up Holland. I remember watching a documentary years ago. I think Davina McCall did it, actually. And it was showing what sex education was like in Holland compared to the UK and how the kids dealt with it, British kids compared to the kids from Holland. And it was fascinating. You know, all the kids were from the UK were giggling and really embarrassed and, oh my God, I can't believe we're talking about this. And the kids from the Netherlands were just like, well, this is perfectly normal. And they actually brought, so they gave all of the kids, I can't remember how old they were, but younger than it would, I mean, this doesn't even happen in the UK, but it was a younger age group. And they gave all the kids a condom, and then they brought in like these plastic phallic penises for each of the students to put a condom on, the girls and the boys. And they were just doing it like it's, you know, part of a biology class, and they're just doing it and it was fun. And all the British kids were bright red and so embarrassed. And it was really interesting to see the difference.
Yeah, it's a polar difference, isn't it? I think that normalization within the homes is not just about the school system. So obviously the schools are quite regimented with what they can and can't teach. But actually in our homes, if we can normalize those conversations, there is often, like, you're often watching something on the TV or you hear something on the radio, and you can kind of tap into that. It's those moments that you can choose to back away or you can choose to lean into them. And I would always encourage parents, particularly of those that are about to become teenagers, to lean into those conversations rather than shying away from them, because it will pay off. They will open up to you when they then need to, which is the important thing.
Yeah. And so in the books, it's a mixture of, as I say, practical advice and personal reflection. What are some of your reflections of going through this experience yourself?
I think for me, it's been a tough journey with the fact of how much children pull away from you at this point. Like, you've worked really alongside them, and it's been, for the most part, really rewarding bringing up children. And then they get to this point and you feel like you're losing them. Mm. But one thing I've learned is that children are actually programmed at this age. Firstly, their brains aren't fully developed, so they're not adults, even though they think they are. And even though we like to give them quite a lot of responsibility, but we as parents are still really responsible for guiding them and just being that constant in their lives. So one thing that's come away, that I've brought away from it, is to always collect your children. So rather than shouting up for them for tea, maybe go and find them in the room and bring them back down and reach out to them and kind of touch their hand from time to time and just keep centering yourself back in their world, even though they'll be like, oh, mom, leave me alone. Like, I don't actually want to be with you. Just keep turning up. It's so important to be that constant for them. But also they are programmed to think that we are stupid. It's a tribal thing. So that helped me take it less personally, I think.
Yeah.
So ancestrally, they are programmed to move away from our tribe. They're not meant to hang around with us forever, nor would we want them to. So I think that knowing that and knowing that it's a natural part of their development has helped me to, like I say, take it less personally, because it's not about us as parents. A lot of the stuff they do isn't a reflection on us. They're not trying to be mean or be horrible towards us. It's just the way that their brains are programmed to work at this stage of their lives.
Yeah, so interesting and really important to know and understand what's happening with them biologically and inside their brains and with their bodies and hormones, and to understand, as you say, that their behaviour isn't personal. And I suppose a lot of parents go through life not doing that research and not understanding that, and just thinking that their kids are being really annoying and unreasonable and rude just because they're a teenager, instead of understanding that that's normal and they can't help it. They're not doing it on purpose to be mean.
Yeah, I think there is that. And I think there's also a massive amount of overwhelm. So there can be people with really good intentions to bring up their children as best they can, but there is just so much information out there that it's really easy, especially with social media, even as a parent, to feel really overwhelmed by the information that you're given. And it's all very well someone saying, oh, read a book, and which is exactly what I'm doing. But what I've tried to do is make it as simple and accessible as possible. And I've done all the research for you, so you can just pick up my book, which is a very easy to pick up and put down book. It's in small sections. So you're not expected to kind of read a massive manual or trawl the internet to find the information that you need. I've tried to draw it all together because we're all busy. We don't have time. Like, no parent has time to sit down and read kind of like a 1,000-word book. Like, that just isn't how it works.
I had a message from one of our listeners saying, on the issue of talking to your teen about sex, what if the father is missing from the house, as is much more common now? I suppose they mean, you know, if the father can't have the talk with his son, the mother has to do it, I suppose. I mean, there aren't any rules with that, really, as whether it should come from the mother or the father.
No rules at all. I would just say everybody talks to one another. And the more that you do that, it doesn't have to be about yourselves directly. It doesn't even need to be about them. Use something that you can get in front of them with. So it might be something that they might ask you the questions, but the chances are they won't. And if they don't ask you the questions, use something that you can lean into. Like I said, TV is a really good thing to do. So you could watch something that's not completely risque, but kind of on the boundary of what makes you feel comfortable together, something that's reasonably age appropriate, but maybe that would raise some questions. And that's quite a good way, if you are uncomfortable about just having a chat, that's quite a good way to do it. But aside from that, I would say stick to the facts and then give your opinion.
Yeah.
So I try and give the facts about what's happening, how it happens, what it is, allow them time to ask questions, and then give your opinion. So if you have family opinion on it, or you have a cultural interest in it, then obviously that's the time to then put that forward. But I would do that secondary. Just give the facts first.
Yeah. Yeah. And the facts are important, because if you're not giving them the facts, they'll get the so-called facts from their friends or from the internet, and it might not be true. I mean, I remember growing up and hearing old wives' tales that they used to call them, and different ways that you can't get pregnant if you're in certain positions and things like that, which was all utter nonsense. Yeah. And, you know, so just because your mate says, oh, if you do it like this, you'll be fine, you need to make sure that you're giving them the correct information.
Yeah, I mean, there is so much out there for them to be able to access easily now. That's the thing. So actually, the average age, for example, the average age that children see porn at the moment is just 13. So if we're putting our head in the sand and we're not allowing them to have those conversations, the chances are they will be learning about sex education from pornography because it's so easily accessible. And it may not be from their own devices. You could have put all the parental controls on in the world and then they sit next to their friend on the bus and they show them something. Mm. So there isn't any getting away from that. And so I think it's really, really important that we tackle it head on.
Yeah. Yeah, and pornography is a good example of a subject that could easily make parents embarrassed to just broach the subject, you know, and the kids will probably be embarrassed to discuss that subject with their parents. But even just saying a sentence like, just so you know, this isn't real, this isn't what normally happens, don't expect that to happen, don't let the boy tell you that that's what's supposed to happen, you know, just kind of just get that information out there. That's like really important. Yeah.
That's right, because teens are curious, right? It's really natural for them to be curious about these things, and they will go searching for stuff, as we all probably did at that age. But like I say, because everything is so much more accessible to them, it's really tricky. The Children's Commissioner report recently said that some children have seen pornography as young as six. So,
whoa,
it's crazy.
That is frightening. Oh my goodness.
I think it was something like 27% of children had seen it by age 11. So they're the conversations that we just can't afford to ignore anymore.
Gosh, I've had a message from another of our listeners. Corinne said, could you please ask if in general mums are more understanding and patient than the dads? This is my case with our 18-year-old. Do you know, with all the different people you've spoken to, does that kind of come across?
Yeah, I mean, not necessarily mums versus dad, but I definitely think in any relationship there's good cop, bad cop. So we have it in our household, dependent on what the subject is, we will have a, if we're going to tackle a tricky conversation, one of us will do good cop and one of us will do bad cop. So one of them can afford to be a little bit harder in any messaging and the other one can kind of take a softer, more nurturing approach to any situation that we're in. Yeah. But no, it's not necessarily something I've seen is just a dad thing. I think the mums tend to sometimes be a little bit more scared and they kind of get carried away in their minds about where situations will lead to. So that prevents them from having conversations a lot of the time.
Mm. Yeah, it's interesting and important to have, as you say, have those conversations with your partner and maybe plan it beforehand so you know who's going to be good cop, bad cop.
Yeah, I mean, one of the best tips that I have kind of found as I've been working through and something that I've included in the book is to have a boundaries list set out before you even start. So before your teens get, before they're even teens, actually, have a moment where you sit down just with whoever you're parenting with. So it could be on your own. It could be that you're co-parenting. It could be with a partner or even grandparents, and just come together with some scenarios that you think might happen. So what happens if they don't do their homework? What happens if they come home drunk? What happens if they break curfew? Like, make up these scenarios, think back to yourselves, because I'm sure we all have these scenarios, and then put your boundaries in place while you're in a completely calm situation.
That's so clever.
It just allows you to not be as reactive, and it also on the same page with one another then, because one won't make a decision without thinking, oh, actually, we talked about this. I know where we need to stand. That's been a real success for a lot of people that have tried it now.
Yeah, that makes an awful lot of sense, because you could easily have one parent that will react in a certain way and the other one will be like, that's a bit harsh. I don't think you need to ban them for going out for a month. And then you have to undermine them by going back on what they've said. And yeah, it gets complicated, doesn't it? So it's better that you're on the same page from the start.
And I think when you're angry, like, you're going to be angry. If a child misses a curfew, the chances of you being completely calm about it are kind of slim to none, especially if you've been worried about them or you've been sitting up. You know, when you get, it's a very heightened situation. So actually, by having this list in your head, you can just be like, all right, just give me a minute. I just need to reflect back in my mind to what we discussed. And then it just gives you a little bit of a calmer perspective generally.
Yeah. Well, some great advice there, Nicole. Thank you so much. If people want to get a copy of your book, it's called Not a Survival Guide, Your Straight Talking Parenting Companion for Navigating the Shift from Childhood to Teen. It's available on our website, tre.radio, and it's by Nicole Howes, who we've been chatting with. Nicole, thank you so much.
Thanks so much for your time.